Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. So we are 21 days now into what will become, in a matter of hours, the longest ever federal government shutdown. The last time the federal government was offline for this length of time was in 1995 under President Bill Clinton and a Republican Congress, which at the time was led by Newt Gingrich, who wanted bigger cuts in Clinton's budget. Here's Clinton back then.
The government is partially shutting down because Congress has failed to pass the straightforward legislation necessary to keep the government running without imposing sharp hikes in Medicare premiums and deep cuts in education and the environment.
Now, they eventually found a compromise. I think political historians say basically Newt Gingrich caved when the politics of it turned against him too much. But still, there was some language there in which they could both claim some kind of victory. So far in 2019, that has not happened. Pelosi and Trump, last I saw, aren't even speaking. And today, of course, is payday for federal employees. So in addition to the pain and the risk that's being inflicted on the population, increasingly we heard in Richard's newscast about part of the Miami International Airport shutting down, food inspections cutting back, but 800,000 people will miss an actual paycheck for the first time this shutdown today, about 400,000 of whom are going to work anyway, working for free, at least for the moment. Now, yesterday, hundreds of federal employees took to the streets in protest. Here's a new front, led by airport workers, in fact, like TSA workers and air traffic controllers. Demonstrations popped up in places, including here in New York, in Atlanta, and, of course, in front of the White House. If you couldn't make that out, it was today we want our pay. The shutdown is also shining a light on the fact that so many Americans are one paycheck away from disaster. 78% of U.S. workers, according to CareerBuilder, live from paycheck to paycheck, and most Americans have less than $1,000 in savings. Joining us to talk about the shutdown and the politics driving it is Sarah Frostenson, senior politics editor at 538. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to WNYC. Thanks for coming on.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, first priority on the phones right now for anyone personally impacted by the shutdown. Any federal workers listening right now? How will you make ends meet? 212-433-WNYC, or where are you going to find the biggest challenges? Anyone who can't get the needed services you depend on because things are closed or slow, 212-433-9692. And what about anyone who has dealt with missing paychecks at any time? Did you pay your rent or did you pay your utilities bill? Did you go without food? Did you have trouble feeding your kids? What came first and how did you cope? Especially in those early days, maybe before any benefits kick in, which might be the most analogous to federal workers right now. Tell us your story and help out the people who thought they were steadily employed in this until this political stalemate, or anybody directly affected by the shutdown resulting from this political stalemate. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Help us report this story. So you're a political reporter, Sarah. There's one line of political analysis that says Democrats might cave because federal workers tend to be their constituents and won't be able to stomach the pain that the shutdown is causing them. And, you know, the pushback will start to come on the Democratic members of Congress who
right.
might be more responsive. So is there any evidence that anything like that is happening?
Well, we've been talking about that internally. Right now, the polls seem to put the blame on Trump's shoulders. The three polls that came out right after the government first shut down on December 21st, that immediate week until now, more Americans are blaming Trump. But something I think we've been thinking about in our coverage is, right, Democrats are the party of governance, which means having a government that's open. That said, this is the third shutdown in the last year that's over immigration. And I think you've seen in both parties, it's a really deeply symbolic issue. And they are in such a situation now that there's no room for compromise because it's so deeply symbolic. And I honestly, you know, I think we might be headed now towards a state of national emergency as a way to fund it on the Republican side because Congress is at such an impasse.
Right. This national emergency, quote unquote, where Trump would declare one and just take the wall money from other federal budgets. Politically, how do you see the dynamics of that decision and the risks for either side?
Right. So for Republicans, it's kind of an uncharted territory of the instances in which presidents have used the National Emergency Act before. And my understanding is the idea is the House would try to say, okay, we're going to sue. I don't understand how that will play out legally. So that's an interesting challenge if that approach is what moves forward. However, I think from a Trump's base perspective, he's in a strong position because he's not backing down. I think for Democrats, it's like, look, here's our president again defying norms. And it gives them a place of strength as well because they haven't given anything to his agenda.
Reports are that the president has been briefed on the possibility of using disaster money to fund the border wall if he declares a state of emergency. In other words, taking it away from wildfire victims in California and hurricane victims in Puerto Rico and things like that. Why that of all things?
My understanding is it's because that's the bulk of money that's easily available. But right, I mean, I think the risk of that is the exact reasons you mentioned. That will be what the coverage will focus on, is now victims of wildfires in California have less funds available to them because of what some have argued is a manufactured crisis at the border. So there is that inherent political risk, I think.
Where else from the defense budget might he pull the money? It's not actually much money. I don't have the total defense budget in front of me. I could look it up. But $5 billion is not much money considering the size of the Pentagon budget. One of the single biggest items out of the $4.5 trillion annual federal expense ledger.
Right, right. And it's also interesting back to, could this be resolved in Congress? You know, if you're the Democrats, it's only $5 billion. Do you say, okay, we will work with you on this in order to get through DACA or some other big enterprising bucket list legislative item for them? But you don't seem to see movement in that corner.
How is the Mueller and Michael Cohen news politically related to the shutdown and the possible ways out, if you think it is? There's this whole parallel track, obviously, of news developments going on regarding the investigations. And I wonder if you think politically they start to intersect.
That's harder to know. I mean, something we've been looking at closely is how his approval rating has fared in the past week. And it has pretty much lined up when the government shut down on the 21st and has taken a hit, at least one percentage point down from last week. How that relates to Mueller, I haven't seen any recent polling there on public opinion where are you siding more with Trump or are you siding more with the Mueller investigation? But if that really does ramp up here in February, that could create quite a problem for him.
Let's take a phone call. William in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, William.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm a former EPA employee. I'm recently retired, and you know, thank God, the pension and Social Security and distributions from the 401k are all self-funded, so I don't have to worry. But my former colleagues at EPA, and I'm in touch with them, are facing this, and I remember what the last one was like. You have to apply for state unemployment compensation. You're not sure that you're actually going to get paid at all. It's you know, there's this promise that you keep hearing. Well, they'll retroactively pay you, but you don't know that for sure. And in the meantime, also you're the work that you're doing is going undone. So weeks go by, and, you know, I was working for EPA. I mean, EPA is involved with, you know, cleanups all over the country that benefit communities, municipalities, and also, to some extent, benefit private parties who are cleaning up these sites. And so the agreements that you're negotiating for cleanups of private of sites are going unnegotiated. That's a 3-week delay in cleaning up groundwater and cleaning up pollution.
William, I'm curious if you remember from the shutdown that you were there for, whether the contractors who do a lot of that work ever got paid, because that's another whole, you know, stream of pain here. Because even if the government workers themselves get retroactive pay when this is over, my understanding is that many of the contractors don't. Do you have any stories along those lines from that, from your day in that respect?
I don't remember specifically, but EPA enters into contracts with private contractors all the time. All of these Superfund sites involve contracts with private parties, and if those contracts can't be entered into, if they can't be managed, if they, they all of that will slow down. I'm sure contractors start laying off people on these projects. Mm-hmm. They have to be. Sometimes when you stop a big Superfund site, stop a big project, you have to start it up again, and that's expensive. It impacts the contractors, certainly.
Thank you very much, William. And Sarah, I mean, this is one of the scenarios, if Trump doesn't first declare a national emergency and just do what he does to move money around, where the pressure could really start getting ramped up. What if at one of those Superfund sites or somewhere else, somebody gets really sick, right, from exposure that's not being taken care of because so many EPA workers are furloughed? Or what if there's an E. coli outbreak because the FDA is pulling back so much? Or what about when more airports, like we just heard about Miami, start shutting down terminals and their airport delays and cancellations all over the country that aren't just, a matter of spectator sport politics where people are saying, oh, isn't that terrible? People aren't getting paid. But more and more and more Americans are having their lives impacted one way or another. That would change the politics, right?
Absolutely. There was initially, they were unsure if the USDA would be able to do food stamps next month. And it's been interesting how President Trump has chosen to respond, saying, federal workers support the wall, they're willing to be on furlough because of this, and also seems to think many of them are Democrats, when it's not just people in Washington. The federal government is all across the U.S., and I think that's being neglected in how he thinks about it at the moment.
Let's take another call. Tracy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tracy.
Hi. I work for the Securities and Exchange Commission, where I help to investigate and prosecute securities fraud cases. Mm-hmm. So I'm very upset that I'm not able to do that at the moment. And I think that's a real problem for our country. Putting that aside, I'm an older employee, and I tend to put all of my money that I can into, retirement. And so the amount of money that I have to live, every week is really, paycheck based. And so, I'm lucky. I have a high income. I'm going to probably be able to, make it through this pay period. But I'm very concerned about these comments about the shutdown lasting, a month or more. And I would have to cash out of my retirement savings, at a very high penalty. And, that would be very, very hard for me financially. As to the contractors, we actually have many contractors who I work with. They're the paralegals and IT people. There are a lot of them. And I mean, I'm just sick to my stomach when I think of the fact that they are not going to be able to get retroactive pay if it becomes available for me. It's very unfair. They tend to actually be more people of color. They make less money, and it just really stinks.
Tracy, thank you very much for your call. Sarah Frustenson from 538, senior political editor, our guest. On the politics of the Republican side of the aisle in Congress. According to the Washington Post's count, 8 House Republicans voted for the Democrats' bill to reopen the government without border wall funding. There are a few senators who've come over too now. So if Mitch McConnell were to hold a vote in the Senate, the government would actually get reopened if everybody votes the way they say. So that, what about the – I mean, that's a whole other front that I feel like we're not hearing all of that much about, not so much pressure on Mitch McConnell to just hold the vote, because a majority of both houses of Congress probably would vote to open up the government and delay the debate about a wall.
Right. And I think right now, in terms of the blame game, congressional Republicans are actually the least accountable at the moment. It's either you're blaming Trump or you're blaming Democrats for how they're handling it. And after Trump met with lawmakers yesterday, McConnell, they had a unified front, and it was very clear that we're behind the president, and he was not going to put a vote on the floor that he thought Trump would veto. So it doesn't seem as if much movement will come from Republican leadership.
And what about, well, let's take another call. Here is, let's see. Yes, Ettore in Mamaroneck wants to follow up on that point. Hello, Ettore, you're on WNYC.
Oh, yes. Thank you for taking my call. You just preceded my comment, which actually was Mitch McConnell need to be more involved, I mean, publicly called to action. I mean, because at this point, it seems like the buck, instead of stopping on the president desk, stops with Mitch McConnell.
Ettore, thank you very much. So to that point, what are the... I think, you know, I guess we understand the politics of McConnell to be he feels like there's more at risk for the larger Republican agenda if he allows a vote on this, even though a majority would vote to open the government, than if he sticks with the president and goes against the will of the majority. What about those Republicans who are defecting? Why is their politics on the Republican side of the aisle different than Mitch McConnell's?
Well, I think who we've seen be most vocal at this point are the usual suspects. Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Susan Collins of Maine, and now Cory Gardner of Colorado, who's up for election here in 2020. It's really the moderate Republicans, at least in the Senate, who are at this moment stepping forward and saying enough is enough.
Because they're afraid of getting blamed by the electorate.
That would be my understanding, yes.
And Lindsey Graham says the president cannot cave on wall funding because it's so central to his political identity, to Trump's, that it would be effectively the end of his presidency if he loses this fight. Does that sound right to you as a matter of political analysis? And do Democrats need to take that into account when figuring out how to help end it?
Yeah, it's a little hyperbolic, but I do think Graham is onto something there. This is something, it was a campaign promise. This is what his base wants, and he wants to deliver on that. Trump has privately said many times, you know, if I don't have my base, I have nothing left. And I think that's what we're seeing in this current political theater. And for Democrats, I think we're also seeing the formation around the opposite narrative, that we want to be a country that welcomes immigrants and doesn't turn them away, and a wall is symbolic of that.
Well, that's the bottom line, isn't it? That this isn't just about a wall and about crime, which Trump likes to emphasize, and about drugs coming across the border. This is about immigration and racism and who we are as a nation. Because remember, and I wonder, again, for you as a political analyst, why don't the Democrats turn back the clock to last year and say, and pass through the House, a version of what was on the table last year as a bipartisan solution and almost came to yes, which was full wall funding. They were offering Trump $20, $25 billion, the total that he wanted. You remember this, in exchange for DACA, legalizing the Dreamers, and I think TPS, legalizing the people who are here under temporary protected status, mostly from various Latin American Caribbean countries, who the Trump administration is now trying to kick out. So they almost came to yes on that deal. There was a bipartisan coalition forming in Congress, but the hardliners got to Trump, and he said, no, only if we put other things on the table, like cutting legal immigration in half. So why don't the Democrats put that old compromise on the table and say, here it is, Mr. President, we're going to give you your whole wall. You give us DACA and TPS, we dare you.
Right. That's something we've, again, been discussing internally, because to some extent, you feel like if they could push for DACA, that would be a huge win, right? And before the government shut down, they even were willing to do $1.3 billion in funding. But again, that wasn't sufficient to his demands. And I think part of the reason why this is now our third shutdown in the last year over immigration is because the parties are just increasingly, there's a chasm between them and how they view it. You've seen more diversity in the Democratic base in the last 10 years than in the GOP base. And you've seen more voters on the Democratic side be pro-immigration, which just wasn't where the two parties were in, say, 2006. Things have just changed a lot, I think, within the last 10 to 12 years.
One more call from someone being personally affected. Meryl in Port Washington, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling.
Oh, sure. So I'm not being personally affected, but I was mentioning to your screener the sort of trickle-down effect of this is that I have somebody who cleans my house, who works in a cash business, and she's taking care of three kids in college, and she got a call from two different people who work for the government, and they cannot afford to pay her these last few weeks because they need to keep their money a little closer at hand. So she's lost two jobs during this month, and as she's trying to pay her own bills and help her children, it's sort of having the nest effect. And then she's not going to be able to go to the store and get what she needs and so on and so forth. So it even has a farther reach than the just the person who doesn't get the money.
Meryl, thank you so much for that. And Sarah, yeah, there's an example of the trickle-down effect of the shutdown.
Absolutely.
And we will leave it there. My guest has been Sarah Frostenson, Senior Politics Editor at 538. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Much more to come.